coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, what up, y'all? Welcome to Who Shall Ya? It's your boy, your host, Ricky Carmona. Very excited to be back up in the building. That's what's up. Oh, with me, as always, I have the lovely film critic and host of Switchblade Sisters. It's the one and only Sometimes It Snows in April Wolf. April, what is good?
I agreed to give a talk to 42 teenage girls about movies after they'd gone to the theater to see a bunch of classic films, and it was a life-affirming experience.
That's what's
up. It was wonderful. There are 42 teenage girls who want to have in-depth discussions about light, cinematography, makeup artistry, costume design, and directing, and all of these things, and it just made me feel so good.
All aspiring young filmmakers.
Yeah, and their teacher contacted me because he's a listener of Switchblade Sisters and thought that I would be fun to talk with them. And I made them watch Night of the Hunter. That was my big contribution.
Ooh, wow.
And I was so happy that they told me, and I, like, before I told them that it was mine, like, my choice, they were like, that's our favorite. That's our new favorite. And I was like, yes.
Yes. Also with me in the studio, he's the film reviews editor at the Rap, the Medal of Navidad, the one and only Mr. Alonso Duralde. What is good, Alonso?
Well, it would be belaboring the obvious to point out that Hallmark announced today that they're going to do 34 new movies this Christmas. So instead, my what's good is, have y'all played HQ yet?
Not yet. I have so many invites for HQ on my phone.
It is an app, and it's a live quiz show that happens twice a day, and it's 12 multiple choice questions. They start crazily easy, and then they get real hard, and if you make it all the way through, which I have not yet done, you split like a 5,000 or 25,000, depending, like pot, mm-hmm. With the other people who made it all the way through to the 12 questions. It's super fun and goofy, and if you join, say that I sent you a Duraldi, A-D-U-R-A-L-D-E, and give me extra lives, thank you. But it's a hoot, and I'm having a good time with it.
That's what's up, yo. That's what's up.
We got a guest.
I'm nervous.
Yes, we do have a guest. I jumped the gun. I was actually like, why isn't April asking me what's good?
Because you're being rude to our guest, Richard.
I'm being unprofessional. I miss 1 week, and I become completely unprofessional.
Ricardo.
¿Qué me pasa?
Oh, I'm going to forget again now.
Tenemos invitada.
Sí, gracias, gracias. Ladies and gentlemen, she's the host of Pop Trigger and Murder with Friends. I want to know if she is named after the New York disco funk There Before the Grace of God Go song. Let us meet the one and only Grace Baldridge, y'all.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. What is good? Are you named after Machine's There Before the Grace of God Go I?
I really don't think so, but it's possible. Maybe it just never came up with my parents. I don't know. What's good with me? I have a 9-month-old puppy who was driving me crazy for a time and just today learned 3 new commands.
Oh,
so
excellent.
Very good. All stuff that is not useful, but he learned them.
What are the commands?
He learned up because he was standing so much up on his hind legs and I figured I should just train him to do that on command. He learned up and he learned down and maybe that is useful. And... And his name, actually, that is you. They're too useful, one not.
So stop chewing mommy's shoes was not one of them.
No, nope.
What is your dog's name?
His name is Jellybean Jones, named after from the Archie comics and then also from the show Riverdale. And he is one of 2 dogs that I own because I am that crazy lesbian.
No, I respect that 100%. Jellybean, and what's Jellybean?
His brother?
Yes.
Willie Nelson.
So is Willie... Okay, so I feel that like when you have kids or dogs or anyone, like you get the dog or person that you deserve when you name them. So, like, maybe by naming it Jellybean, you're like, oh, this one's going to be wacky.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct on that. We sort of knew that he was going to be crazy, and Willie Nelson, his older brother, is just kind of a huge stoner pit bull. So
name the next one Margaret Dumont. It'll be a lot calmer, yeah. I think. Ricky, what's good?
God damn it. I was just...
Boom! It's my turn.
I will tell you what is good. Thank you for asking me. Alonzo, ladies and gentlemen, Alonzo, my man, brings me in a copy of Nashville Criterion Collection on Blu-ray, which I am holding up in front of everybody with a big-ass smile on my face. I am hyped as hell to watch this movie. There's certain movies that you haven't even watched it, that you just know, like, I'm going to love that movie. Mm. And the clips I've seen from Nashville, what I know about Robert Altman, how much I just love Paul Thomas Anderson. Like, I already know this is going to be, what is it, 2+ hours? It can 6 hours. And I'm like, all in. All in.
I can't wait for the book report.
You just did the motion of like a conductor like blowing a horn on a train as you said that. You're yes. Like, all in. Choo-choo.
That is my conductor / Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's what's up. Everybody, on today's episode, we are going to be talking about teen flicks, coming out stories, and Love, Simon. And as always, we will have our staff picks for you. But first, it's time for our news roundup game called It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. I will read a news blurb or headline. April, Alonzo, or Grace will jump in with their take by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? So let's get started, shall we? It seems that the former assistant for Stanley Kubrick is looking to make a quick buck. Emilio D'Alessandro is selling off a rare cut of The Shining on the Italian auction site Asta Voglia Fai. The cut apparently contains the rare scene in which Wendy, played by Shelley Duvall, carries Danny, played by little Danny Lloyd. D'Alessandro is also selling off shirts worn by Jack Nicholson during production of The Shining, as well as posters, bags, and other items owned by Kubrick. Is this important? Do you all care?
I feel weird about the footage part. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the personal mm-hmm. effects and the bags and the whatever, sure. But Kubrick was so super anal about the versions of his films, you know? Like, I know if he didn't include that scene in the movie, then he doesn't want that scene in the movie. And I don't know. I just sort of feel like it, you know... I went to the Kubrick exhibit at LACMA. You know, I've seen all the million notes he took for Napoleon and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, this is a movie that he finished and completed in a way that he wanted to complete, and I don't think we should get to see that stuff.
Yeah, dude, he burned all of the other cuts.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He was like, nope, set them on fire. He had, like, a big bonfire, and was just like, these are gone.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Apparently he gave them to D'Alessandro, though, so that's, like, I mean, they are his possessions. If Kubrick gave it to him.
Yeah, because this guy was his personal assistant for 30 years.
Like, they're
so
clearly friends.
No, like, I mean, it's not, like, illegal or anything. I just think it's tacky.
Yeah. Hey, y'all, can we pour one out one last time?
Oh, no.
Yes, for DC's Justice League. The movie just finished its worldwide theatrical run, and the numbers are in. It is officially the lowest grossing of the DC films, grossing $675.9 million, it finished below Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, Wonder Woman, Suicide Squad, and Man of Steel. Is this important? Do you care? Are the producers trolling me by constantly bringing up and reminding me that I love Zack Snyder and I am in a minority on that? I get it, y'all. I get it.
Dude, this is a lot of money that we're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm like, I think like my, like I just saw like in the notes that we got, Suicide Squad had a total of $747 million that they made. What the fuck? Why? How? Like, this is so much money, you guys.
I saw it twice in theaters.
What?
I'm willing to tell my story.
Please do. Please do.
I saw it the first time in theaters after not heeding the caution of numerous Facebook posts from friends of mine saying, do not go and see this movie, not even as a joke. I went as a joke. I saw it with a friend of mine, and it was bad. It's agreed. It was not good.
No. Yeah. Not good. Yeah.
But I couldn't understand why it was so bad. And I remember talking it out with my girlfriend that night, just being like, then this happened. And I had so many questions. Like, where was the turn? Because there were things that I did like. I really liked Harley Quinn. I liked Margot Robbie in mm-hmm. it. I was mm-hmm. interested to see more of her. There were elements that I thought worked really well. So then I said, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I did like this movie. Or at least I should figure out where it went off the rails. So I went back like two nights later with another friend of mine that I was conning these friends, by the way. I was tricking them into thinking that it might be okay, and I didn't say that I'd seen it before.
And as the dog returneth to its own vomit.
Yeah. And I sat through it again, and I was able to sort of pinpoint when things go bad. And right. It is kind of Cara Delevingne's character. That entrance that's when it's a huge mess from there. So I gave it some of this money, and I'm sorry, April.
Okay, well,
I'm
then
responsible.
All right, then, like, Justice League, like, how is it better than, I mean, maybe we can't say it's better. Like, box offices don't tell us
I think, here's the thing, you know, when the first Avengers movie came around, you had people who, some, you know, people liked the Iron Man movie. They liked the Captain America movie. Maybe not so much the Hulk movie and Thor, sure, whatever, you know. But it was like the idea of like bringing them all together felt new and special and different.
Yeah.
And then by the time they got the first Justice League movie, first of all, the Avengers movie had already happened. So that particular element of lightning in a bottle was gone. And you had like everybody loved Wonder Woman. Everybody loved Wonder Woman.
Yes. I am not an apologist for Justice League. I want to make that very clear. It is a bad movie.
Well, it's not even a Snyder movie. It's like Franken, part yeah. Snyder, yes. part Joss Whedon.
Yeah, all
and
of
it doesn't flow together.
No chance.
Yeah, that is my major gripe with it is... It's just, it doesn't even if you didn't like Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, there's at least some continuity to those movies. And Justice League just feels like, all right, you guys just gave up and tried to like step in and do your own thing to it. And it is a hot mess. $670-something million dollars is still a lot of paper.
Yeah, and it's not even a fun mess like Suicide Squad with these over-the-top characters. I think that's why Suicide Squad did well, because it was so crazy and weird and over-the-top, whereas Justice League was just a boring mess.
Well, yes. I mean, and Suicide Squad had those billboards, you know? It had those ads, it had those trailers, and the movie never lived up to any of it, but you saw that and you thought, ooh, this looks bananas. I'm in, you know?
Yeah, the trailer didn't have, like, Bohemian Rhapsody to it.
At something. I mean, like, they actually went back and tried to make the movie funnier to be more like the trailer because people responded to the trailer so much, you know?
Yeah. How can we make this more jock jammy? People love jock jam.
I have all 27 volumes on CD, April.
Now that's what I call jock jam.
April, we can file this next story in your category. There's a remake of the film Chopping Mall in the works. And according to the new film's director, Robert Hall, there's going to be no killer robots. The original film came out in 1986 and features Switchblade Sisters guest and friend Barbara Crampton. The movie itself is about a group of mall teens who are terrorized and brutally murdered by a group of renegade security robots. I love that sentence. Mm-hmm. In the interview he did with Nightmare Toys YouTube show, director Robert Hall said, "My version of Chopping Mall that I wrote is totally supernatural. It's more The Fog, John Carpenter's The Fog, set in an abandoned mall than it is robots. Instead of killer robots, there are these mannequins that are possessed by the souls of dead slaves that worked at the plantation that the mall was built over." April, is this important? Do you care?
Let me give you guys a little primer.
I wish you would.
Chopping Mall wasn't even called Chopping Mall until they released it. Roger Corman was like, this is not a good title for it. I think it was something very... a simple, like, killer robot. And Barbara Crampton, I asked her about it, and she I can't remember, she gave me the correct title of it. He just knew titles and marketing. He just knew that people were going to go see something called Chopping Mall, even though no one actually gets chopped in the original Chopping Mall.
Like, but they're in the happen. Sherman Oaks Galleria, damn it.
They are in the Sherman Oaks really? Galleria, which is, you know, where, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, yes, and Night of the Comet were both filmed, and so many other movies back in the 1980s. And so the idea that they, and I don't know if this is Shout Factory or not, but I know that they bought the entire, you know, a big catalog of Roger Corman's movies, and they were going to remake it. I would assume that this might be in that catalog. And we're going to see this happening again and again, because Corman knew marketing and premises. And, you know, even like the movies weren't good, people would go to the theaters to see them because they were like, what the fuck? Like, this is called Chopping Mall.
Killbots.
Killbots, thank
was
you.
Was the original title.
And
it's good.
And
it works. No, thank you. And that's chopping mall.
I'm excited to see because there's going to be a lot of directors who are going to be reimagining these things and maybe making them even like just better movies because they're going to have like a budget and time. But they'll have the same premise and the same amazing name, like the weird titles that he dreamed up. And this is just one of those where it's not going to be the same movie. But you guys, that description, y'all, what?
No. Yes.
That's amazing.
I'm sorry. Do not waste my time with no robots in your chopping mall.
I'm up for like whatever remakes. Like I always say, like give horror a chance, and you know maybe I'll love it, maybe I won't. Like you know, I'm so psyched.
If Ava DuVernay wants to give me slave ghost mannequins, yes. But like I don't know who this person is, and I don't trust him.
But I do have to say, I mean, like that just makes me think of like Nicolas Pesci's new announced The Grudge remake, which is going to be a very different, very very reimagined The Grudge. And I love him because he did The Eyes of My Mother, which is one of my favorite movies.
Oh.
2 years ago. It was in my top 10 list. And it stars my girl Lynn Shay.
Yes.
And it stars Andrea Riseborough.
Girl, ooh.
And it stars Demian Bashir.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And it stars John Cho.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And so written and directed by Nicolas Pesci and produced by Sam Raimi. And with all of those people in it, I'm just like, yes, please give me this movie. Even if it's going to be, you know, I don't know if it's a reboot or a remake, but it's going to be totally different. And I love it.
That I will watch. Chopping Mall without robots? No.
Oh, come on.
Nope.
Chopping Mall is how my mom would pronounce Chopping Mall back in the day.
Mine too.
Mama para el chopping mall, Ricky.
Para el chopping.
Hey, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to be talking about teen flicks, coming out stories, and Love, Simon. We'll be right back, y'all.
Hey guys, this is Adam Conover. You may know me from my True TV show, Adam Ruins Everything. Well, guess what? Now we're doing a podcast version right here on Maximum Fun. What we do is we take all the interesting, fascinating experts that we talk to for just a couple minutes on the show, and we sit with them for an entire podcast, really going deep and getting into the fascinating details of their work. Find Adam Ruins Everything wherever you get your podcasts or at MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
April Wolf.
Grace Baldridge.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today we are talking about Love, Simon. Alonzo, can you give us a brief synopsis of the film, please?
Oh, golly. I lived it. I might as well. No. All right. So Simon is a very sweet boy who lives in the suburbs and has lovely friends and kind parents and a younger sister. And it's, you know, everything seems to be hunky-dory. But he is carrying around a secret. He is a closeted gay guy and is not really ready to deal with that yet in high school, as many high school students are not going to do. Even in 2018, everybody thinks this is a done deal, but no, it is not. So anyway, a classmate comes out anonymously on the school blog, and Simon begins anonymously corresponding with this person, and they, you know, sort of share each other's secrets and, you know, a bit of a flirtation erupts. But in the midst of this, a classmate discovers Simon's emails on the school computer, blackmails him into setting Simon up with one of his female friends, which puts his friendships in jeopardy and his secrecy in jeopardy. But ultimately, this is a John Hughes type coming of age / coming out movie with its own Jake Ryan ending.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. There you go. Thank you very much, Alonzo. Now, the reaction to this film, I mean, online, everywhere I've seen, the reaction to this film has been very positive. What is it about the movie that is getting everybody so excited about it? And also, did everyone enjoy the movie?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you know, here's the thing. I'm also a film festival programmer. That is one of my 18 jobs.
I've said before, you are the Jamaican in living color. How many jobs does he have? 18 jobs. That is Alonzo Duraldi, ladies and gentlemen.
And so, you know, like the coming out movies have been a staple of queer cinema, even teen coming out movies. Like these movies have been around. They have existed. And they have played in 8 theaters. And they have been seen at film festivals. And they have been seen in Europe. But this is a movie that 20th Century Fox produced, and 20th Century Fox is releasing, and they released onto 2,400 screens. And that's huge. That is giant. Like, that is the, for a movie about a gay teenager that doesn't end in tragedy and is on that many screens at once, that is a big step forward.
And just to piggyback off of what you're saying, not only does it not end in tragedy, it lives in a lot of comedy. This is a funny movie. Mm-hmm. I laughed more than I usually laugh in coming out movies, because usually they're real, real sad, and they usually do end in tragedy. So it was so refreshing for me. One, you can tell the budget. A big thing when you go through the Netflix LGBT section is you're always well aware that they were really strained on their budget, whether it comes to locations or even lighting or sound. Mm-hmm. There's something that's sort of off with just the quality of the film, even if the dialogue, if it's very well written, which a lot of times it's not very well written. What I loved about this one is that they had a budget to produce some, get some really good actors. There was a an actress from, I believe, from Insecure that plays the drama teacher.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, she just steals every scene that she's in, and it was just incredibly well written, and it's nice to have that sort of levity, because coming out is really hard, but there are also some really funny moments that come with it too, and I felt like this was one of the first films that really reflected that.
Yeah, there's, I mean, I feel like we've talked about it on the show, and you, both of you have already mentioned it. There's so many times where, like, oh, I want a movie that's about the cause, but don't make it so much about the cause. Where I'm like, oh man, I'm like waving my flag, my Cuban flag in the theater and whatnot. And so I like really appreciated like how much fun this movie is trying to have, and it is pretty goddamn funny. Down to the point where like even the kid who does a terrible thing of like outing a Simon at one point. I mean, I still thought he was very funny. I was surprised that in the theater that I saw it in, I was like one of the few people who was like laughing out loud and coughing very much, just like laughing out loud. What was everybody's like reaction? Did you guys notice in the theater? What was the energy like in the theater?
Well, I went to a press screening, but there were a lot of like teen girls there who were super into it, and I clocked some, you know, high school gay boys who were very enthusiastic about it. But it's funny, like a gay film critic I know kind of came up to me before the movie started and goes, "This is our Black Panther," and he was kidding, but kind of not, in a way, like in the same way that, like, you know, Black Panther isn't the first black movie, but it's this big, expensive, you know, superhero extravaganza, you know. Yeah, there have been a lot of gay movies before this movie, but this is, like you were saying, it's like it's well shot and there's movie stars in it, you know, and it just kind of felt like this moment of like, I didn't realize how badly I needed to see a gay John Hughes movie until I got this one. Mm-hmm. And by the time we got to the ending, I was just sort of losing my breath because as a 17-year-old, I saw 16 Candles countless times. I worked in a movie theater where we were showing, and I was obsessed with that movie. And, you know, it never really dawned on me how much I needed to see, like, that Molly Ringwald, Michael Scheffling finale with two boys in it.
Mm-hmm. April, what'd you think?
I thought it's well written, well acted. I didn't think it was like anything special, right?
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, like when the resolution happens, like my eyes just start falling water. Like my body understands that, like, this is a really important thing. Like that, I guess you can't not feel that way. But I also had to shush. I was in a theater that was like packed. And was the only person who was over the age of like 22. I brought my husband too, and I had to shush some kids next to me who were just like, "God, why is he like so weird about this? Like, it's 2018. Just come out." And I was just like, "Hey, just to let you know, it's not easy for everyone." And then like they like got really quiet. I'm pretty sure they're very stoned. But...
Somebody's mom is yelling at us.
Yeah, exactly. Like, mom was just like, "Be sensitive. There are people who are not coming out because they're still, you know, sorting through their feelings and that kind of stuff." And so
and there are there are lots of places in this country where you can still get the shit beaten out of you on a daily basis for that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
It's like, I've actually dealt with some, you know, some pundits who've been like, really, do gays need this movie now? And I'm like, maybe you on your island of misfit toys where everything's all great and, you don't have to think about your queerness on a day-to-day basis. Maybe you don't need it. But, you know, I think a lot of 15-year-olds need this movie, and I would have needed it at the time.
There's sort of like a basic thing that I think sometimes straight people don't realize is that whenever you start growing up and you recognize that people find someone and they spend their life and they have a family and they basically like start their own sort of family tribe or whatever, you are conditioned to understand that you are worthy of that because you see it in Disney movies that you see that, you know, you will be paired off and you'll find this person and there might be some hardship, but it'll all work out in the end. And for a lot of queer kids, you just sort of grow up not thinking that you're worthy of even that storytelling. I mean, never mind just coming to terms with your own sexuality, but just being worthy of that representation is huge. You deserve a happy ending. You deserve to be loved, and you should be loved, you know, based on all these awesome traits about yourself, and you know, and sexuality is one of those things. And I think that that's what was so cool about Love, Simon is
we're not the sidekick in this
one. Like, you are worthy of being the hero in your own story and being the protagonist and finding this awesome love online.
Really, two like really handsome kids.
This is an attractive cast.
This is very attractive.
Everybody in this movie is beautiful.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Unlike every teen movie that's made for straight people where there were just a bunch of uggos.
Easy A, just all those uggos.
I wanted to ask you guys about, I thought the father character was really wonderful in how he was written because he was saying all these kind of, you know, they were offensive things, but he didn't understand. You know, he wasn't saying them out of like meanness or because he probably, you know, wasn't, you know, pro- like gay rights or anything, but I like that element of the film where they have this character who just like doesn't get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who doesn't get it and is like, and even like these kind of small slights are the things that maybe keep his kid in the closet a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And that seemed really realistic.
Yeah. I think I'm going to put my stand-up comedian hat on right now. I think a fatal flaw that comics have, myself included, when we talk about things that we don't know about, we still try and come at them from an angle of like, I do know about this shit. And you just come off as like an ignorant kind of fool, as opposed to, I just try and let people know right off the bat, hey, here's what I don't know about this issue, and this is why it makes me dumb about that issue. Mm. And I thought the dad character was just really solid about like, I just don't get it, and there's nothing wrong with it. Help me understand it.
Yeah.
Like, I just thought that was
so well done. My problem with it is on me.
Yeah, you know? I thought that was so, so well done. Everybody in the family in the movie is very positive and supportive about what Simon is going through, about the sisters cooking. how did you guys feel about the... The movie deals with, obviously, a real-world issue, you know, being a gay teen and whether you can or coming out of the closet. I think the one kind of issue that I had with the movie is that things were almost, like, a little too perfect sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The movie literally starts off with him saying, I come from a perfect family, my dad was this person, and my mom was this person, and... No hyperbole. My first thought was, I'm checked out. Mm. I'm not feeling this at all. And then it was just kind of like the conflict of, oh, damn, if I want a movie about the cause, does it need to go back to like, I need to wave my flag and this movie needs to be at the cause?
You know, I look, this movie is set
It wasn't a bad thing. It was just an issue that I kept having throughout.
This movie is set in a leafy suburban bubble, but I would argue like the John Hughes movies are a leafy suburban bubble. You know, the Frankie and Annette movies were a bubble on the beach.
Yes.
You know, the Andy Hardy movies were a bubble. Like, I mean, teen movies tend to take place in, it's, you know, they're not a, you know, I mean, yes, some of them are, but the ones that we think of as being kind of the aspirational, fun, romantic, entertaining ones are not about kids in crisis with, like, you know, crackhead moms or whatever, you know, like they're people in nice houses dealing with their personal, you know, issues. And so that didn't bother me. I mean, yeah, there are other stories to be told about other kinds of people growing up in other kinds of circumstances. I would love to see a whole other movie about Ethan, the Clark Moore character, the kid at school who cannot hide his gayness and so does not even bother to try.
Ethan is so good.
He is amazing.
Him so much.
He
was
got so
funny.
Many good one-liners.
Right?
Oh, God. So, you know, I mean, yeah, the this kid has it all in a way, but I think, you know, we take that for granted in the movies so often. You know, nobody complained about how the girl in the Duff, you know, had like such a nice house and her parents were so lovely, you know.
Yeah, I definitely think that was the note that a lot of my other queer friends, we sort of picked up on. This was a very, like, this is the best case scenario for this kid. And a friend of mine came out and got kicked out of the house and had to, like, find a way to Los Angeles. And they definitely felt as though they didn't identify with this story. They were like, I don't get this at all. Like, must be nice, but that's not me. And I think it's important to recognize that there are so many other queer stories yet to be told. And this is a great jumping off point. This is plenty of kids' stories, but it's not all of it. So that's why I keep telling everyone, go give this money movie. Give this movie your money.
And also give that money movie.
Because we need to see more stories. This is just like, you know, sexuality is a spectrum. All these stories are on a spectrum, and there are so many cool stories yet to be told. So I just hope that I'm really nervous that you're going to have these movies executives being like, well, we gave you Love, Simon. What do you want? Another one in 10 years?
Exactly. Some of my Facebook gays who are like filmmakers are like, eh, well, I just hope this movie crashes. And I said, because it's so white and cis and blah, 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 blah. And I said, you know what? If this movie crashes, good luck getting your Asian gender non-binary, you know, story sold, because they're going to point to this one having failed as the reason for the next decade why they're not going to make another movie like
even
this.
Even though it's like not perfect, you have to support it. I mean, there's a lot of good things in it enough to put your dollars into it.
Yeah.
But I do want to make a point about John Hughes, and like we'll even just look at 16 Candles, right, as like the example where there is a space in this movie that wasn't used where there could be kind of a train wreck of a character, but that's not in it. You know, like remember the sister?
Right.
It was just she's on a bunch of pills and she's just like.
Oh, 16 Candles is a problematic fave in a lot of ways.
It is. But there are characters who are just like, they're bad. They're terrible people. And there's something that I like about that existing, because that's, to me, the real world, that there are terrible people. But even the kids who bully the gays, they're like, well, we're sorry. We were bad. We're really sorry. And no one's mad about it.
Well, you both mentioned John Hughes movies. If you grew up with John Hughes movies and you love them for, I'm assuming, the same reasons both of you have, maybe you have as well, Grace. I mean, they represent those of us who we feel aren't shown in movies. I mean, I love The Breakfast Club. When I watch The Breakfast Club, I'm like Anthony Michael Hall. That dork ass, nerdy ass dude. That's me, yo. That's me.
That's cool. He grew up to be like Dead Zone dude, and he got ripped. Yeah, no. So like, it's fine. That's Ricky.
Ricky. What? What other movies out there do you feel are important to you that represent the underrepresented? Do you have one, Grace?
Oh man, I was thinking about this because when it comes to like butch lesbian representation in film, the options are limited, real limited.
Yes.
If we're not on a Law and Order SVU episode as a trucker that saw something, we're probably not in it.
Okay, you've got Fun Home now, all right?
I was thinking about this. There are a couple movies that do stick out. There's one movie called Lost and Delirious, and Piper Perabo plays a tomboy of center high school gay girl that is in love with Jessica Perret, and their romance cannot be because they are obviously two girls. And then, you know, she gets her heart broken and then basically loses her mind, which as a high schooler who got their heart broken and basically lost my mind, I deeply related to. But that's kind of the one that sticks out. A television representation was honestly more important. I remember Shane from The L Word was a was that was my sort of coming of age moment. Be just being able to see that you could dress in that way and have friends, because if you sort of think that you're, you know, everyone's sort of dressing like a girl, and you sort of think that you that's if you don't feel like that's you, that what are you and how do you even fit in? So Shane was huge for me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to add on what you're saying, I when I was a kid, like if there was a brown person in the movie, I was like, this is the greatest movie of all time.
Yeah.
You know, but then what happened was like you started to realize like we have our we are playing criminals, and it's like I don't know how many times I can cheer us doing bad shit, but it's dope to see us on the screen. But I mean, I Stand and Deliver was dope. I mean, Blood In, Blood Out was dope. Pretty much anything Edward James Olmos, American Me, was dope. I mean, I didn't even watch Miami Vice, but I was like, I like that he's air. And then, you know, like, I'm a kid of the 80s. It was John Hughes movies, and if you were a dork, which is what I was, you know, I was a fat, nerdy kid growing up, that's just what I related to, or the extreme opposite, which I would never, you know, at the time admit in public of being like, I want to be the coolest fucking kid, you know? So it's like, of course I want to be, you know, John Bender. I want to be that guy. That guy was dope. April, did you have one? I want April to name some like horror type, like Leatherface.
which final girl, April?
I know, right? I mean, oh God! I mean,
the blonde girl from Friday the 13th Part 2.
I'm closer to like May at this point, you know. I never totally saw myself in high school movies, you know. Like there's always like glimmers of that kind of stuff, but like there weren't just kind of like weird tomboys who wrote plays for themselves and cried in the bathroom. Like there wasn't like a lot of like we weren't really leading any stories. So even like Lady Bird, that's set in a Catholic school, I'm like, I can see like definitely glimmers of that terrible life that I had, but also just like, man, just kind of seems like she had a nice life. Like no one was, you know, being molested in the school, which is like basically like I guess my life was a horror show.
what about old girl from it's a John Hughes movie, Some Kind of Wonderful, Mary Stuart Masterson with the short blonde hair. Was that with
Watts?
Yes. I was so in love with her when I was a kid, like stupid crazy.
Wait, is Mary Stuart Masterson, is that also Iggy from Fried Green Tomatoes?
Yes.
Okay, another one I loved, yeah. That one made
God, she's great.
Yeah.
The lesbian wonderful trajectory here I'm seeing
yep
now.
Okay.
Yeah. I also love Allison Ali Sheedy in the Breakfast Club. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yep.
It's like really, really get her. I really understand
yeah
her.
Like Anthony Michael Hall in 16 Candles and Breakfast Club were probably closest to my heart. But I think the teen character that I relate to the most, I didn't discover until, or didn't exist, rather, until I was already in my 30s. But it was like, oh, God. The kid in Rushmore. I was very Max Fisher. I was so much about like the getting noticed without doing the work, you know. And just I had a lot of moments in Rushmore where I was like, oh my God, they're reading my diary. Like it was very weird.
Well, we asked Twitter the same question about what teen characters in movies they've seen themselves in. So let's go through a couple of these real quick. At Jimmy Bear London said, looking back at my teen years, I was totally Jamie in Beautiful Thing.
Oh, a great coming out movie, by the way.
Contemporaneously, shout out to you, Jimmy, for using that word. My nearest equivalent growing up was probably Chunk and the Goonies. Shout out to Chunk and the Goonies and the Truffle Shuffle.
Oh, yeah, that's a difficult place to be.
At Amiano said, I think I was a hybrid between Ducky and Horace from the Monster Squad. Yes. By the way, another movie y'all need to have a discussion about. Beth Ann Gilmer says, I was a Denise Fleming in Can't Hardly Wait. And Claire Vaughn says, my teen years, I was oscillating wildly between Penny Pingleton and Tracy Turnblad.
Nice.
Shout out to our Twitter followers using these big-ass words that I really have to think about before I pronounce. And I don't. I do not know. I've never seen Hairspray, so I do not know.
What? Richard Louise Carmona. How have you not seen Hairspray?
Of course, the gays on cue are like, what? Hairspray.
Stick to the original, the musical remake, and the TV live version, or whatever. But stick to the actual John Waters movie.
He can't go to the Broadway show.
He could go to the Broadway show, but the John Waters one is the OG.
Okay, because I love all of y'all, I am not a fan of musicals. I will dip my toe in the water.
Well,
with Hairspray.
The original Hairspray is more like a film with music. Mm-hmm. Like okay. there are a bunch of dancing sequences to hits from the era.
Okay, see, so. Now that's that gets me back. I'm excited again. All right, well let's wrap it up here with Love, Simon. Should we screen it? Should people screen it, stream it, or skip it? What do you think, April?
I say screen it, and then I'm additionally going to add that people should watch Soul Searching, S-E-O-U-L, Searching by Benson Lee, which is basically a Korean, American version of a John Hughes movie, which is kind of a response to Long Duck Dong. Definitely that's on iTunes. So definitely watch Soul Searching after you go to the theater to see Love, Simon.
That's what's up. Grace.
Screen it. Do it soon. Pay money. Screen it.
Yes. Alonzo.
Screen it, and then and you're going to go see something else, buy a ticket to Love, Simon, and walk into the other thing. Really, this movie needs to earn.
I would agree. I would say for as much as the issues that I had with it, I would say screen it, because this is one of those movies that I do think is going to make a difference, and we'll get more movies made like this. Hey, we are going to take a break once again, y'all, but when we come back, we will be we're going to be playing a little game based off of Love, Simon, called Signed Blue. We'll be right back. Y'all, you're listening to Who Shot Ya? Hey, y'all, it's the hosts of your favorite movie podcast on MaximumFun.org, Who Shot Ya? This is your boy, Ricky Carmona.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
And I'm April Wolf.
Hey, y'all, the Maximum Fun Drive is coming up. When is it going to be kicking off, Alonzo?
It's kicking off April 2nd, and it's going to last for 2 weeks. This is the first year that Who Shot Ya has played along in the Max Fun Pledge Drive, and dang it, we want to win.
We want to win.
And we're going to win by playing our choicest episodes.
So choice.
We're going to be offering great gifts for new and upgrading members.
It's the best time to support Who Shot Ya and Maximum Fun.
Boom. Welcome back to Who Shot Ya. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in the studio, I have
Alonzo Duraldi,
Grace Baldridge,
April Wolf.
For those of you who haven't seen Love, Simon yet, we're going to give you a little bit of the plot rundown here without getting into spoilers. The movie begins when an anonymous male teenager who goes by the alias Blue writes on a popular blog that he's gay. It causes quite a stir at his high school, with everyone wondering who could it be. Well, we all have things we all want to get off our chests, right? And we were so inspired by Love, Simon, that we all wrote anonymous letters about ourselves. Now, each letter includes 3 facts about ourselves and a chosen alias. We're going to try and guess who each alias is in a game I am calling, wait for it, Signed Blue. Thank you.
Ooh.
Thank you. Thank you. Right off the dome piece.
Yeah.
Right off the dome piece. Here's how it works, y'all. We're all going to read a randomly selected letter that has 3 facts about one of us and an alias. And when they're all read, we will guess who is who. Makes sense to everybody?
Mm-hmm.
You all got it?
Yes.
All right. Grace, you are our special guest.
Thank you.
We would love it if you would start us off, please.
All right. So this was the randomly selected letter.
Mm-hmm.
It says, I lettered in 3 sports in high school. Mm-hmm. I have been known to eat blood sausage. I hate black licorice. Love, Zippo.
Alonzo, would you like to go next?
Sure. I used to eat butter out of the container with a spoon when I was a kid. I went skiing once and couldn't stop at the bottom of the hill. I'm terrible at video games, but eventually beat Pong when I was 22.
Wow.
After much practice. Love, Lars McPatchett.
Lars McPatchett?
Yes.
That's a Christian name right there. April.
I was with Oprah the night Michael Jackson died. Ooh. I've had 3 hernias. My first concert was Genesis. Love, Neil. I had to make sure it wasn't me.
Like, was my life this great?
What?
Weren't we all with Oprah that night?
Yeah.
Oh.
All right, I will read. Oh, I have a letter myself, everybody. I have never owned a rain jacket. My first celebrity crush was Nicole Kidman in Moulin Rouge. Two of my greatest fears are horses and escalators. Love, St. John. We're going to reveal who we are now.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yes,
the coming out moment.
You know what? I'm going to leave it up to anybody here who would like to go first and reveal their identity.
Should we have our guest go first?
Yeah. Yeah, I also feel like it's really obvious. I'm St. John.
Yes!
I did get that.
I got that one.
Yeah.
I will be very honest right now. I have no idea who anybody is. Mm. You are St. John.
Yep.
You've never owned a rain jacket.
I know.
How dare you?
I know. And especially on this rainy day, it's very evident.
And it's not even like rain jackets are particularly femme.
I just have never. It's just pure
get a
lazy.
Carhartt,
at this point, I just save it for podcasts like this, just to say, like, what's your fun fact? Never owned a rain jacket. Grew up in Belgium. Still don't. Don't give a fuck. Like that's me.
You'll have nothing left at cocktail parties if you buy one.
Exactly.
Just what, like, are the other ones? Some of the horses.
Yes, two of your greatest fears are horses and escalators.
They're about equal too.
Horses on escalators or
well, my ultimate fear is having to ride a horse down an escalator. That would really mess
Which
me up.
Which comes up a lot.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And then your favorite celebrity crush
my
was...
My first.
I'm sorry. My apologies.
Yes.
Your first celebrity crush was Nicole Kidman in Moulin Rouge.
Yes. Yeah. Then sort of subsequently followed by Megan Fox in Transformers. But I remember initially watching Moulin Rouge and recognizing that my admiration for Satine was decidedly different than the other sleepover members.
She's a consumption cutie. She dies from consumption. Sorry.
Yeah. Spoilers.
People don't know. Oh, I'm so sorry. For those people who haven't seen Moulin Rouge.
In the last 17
like,
years.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah.
I was saving that one.
Now, did it carry over to Nicole Kidman in The Hours or no?
Pretty much, like, she holds a very special place in my heart, probably forever.
Well, you never forget your first.
Yes.
Oh, who would like to go next?
Okay, I'm Zippo. People get that one?
Yeah,
I was wrong.
I couldn't. Yeah, I didn't get that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I lettered in three sports in high school.
I never would have guessed that.
Well,
I figured that maybe you did, and it was just something you hadn't talked about. I was just like, he seems like he would go all the way. Like, he would be like, if he's going to do something, he's like, I'm going to fucking letter in it. You know? Like,
well, I think probably just because it, you know, it was a lot of showing up, really, was probably, I suspect, most of it. But, yeah, no, my parents would make me do sports in high school until, thank God, I discovered the debate team and I had an excuse to be away every weekend. And it looked good on a college application, so it kept them happy, too. But, yeah, I was a terrible cross-country runner. I was a terrible swimmer and a terrible track runner. So, you know,
that's so
hooray.
Sweet.
Wow.
And I hate black licorice, and blood sausage is delicious. Morcilla. Oh.
What? Okay, what is blood sausage?
It's basically like pig's blood and rice, and it's, you know, in a casing. And here's the thing. When I introduce it to people, I tell them the Spanish name first. And then they try it, and they go, oh, this is delicious. What is it? I go, it's blood sausage.
Yeah.
Monster.
Well, it's much better if you don't know what it is going in.
And then there were two.
That's true. I mean, I feel like mine is pretty obvious.
Mine is pretty obvious.
I crossed it out, and I was just like, Alonzo, no Ricky. No Alonzo. Because I was like, I think Ricky would go see Genesis. But I'm Lars.
Now, when you say butter out of the container, do you mean margarine or butter?
Whatever we had around.
Gotcha.
With a spoon?
It was all delicious.
Any salt on there? Or?
No, no one told me that was a bad thing to do. I was just kind of like singing songs, walking around the house, eating butter.
No, I used to take bites butter. Out of sticks of butter as a little kid. Yeah,
that's crazy to me.
Where did you ski that you couldn't stop?
A very tiny ski hill.
Did you yell pizza? Pizza!
No, but I hit a bunch of, like, it was like all ice, and I ran into the stand where they have the skis.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So mm-hmm. I just knocked that down.
And beating Pong just means like getting to 10 first.
That's
right. It's not like beating Myst or something.
No, it's just that.
Well played, April.
Well, y'all, I am Neil.
Oprah,
Yeah, yo.
Explain.
I went on a 2-week cruise with Oprah through the Mediterranean. It was easily two of the greatest weeks of my life. My friend.
Back up.
Yes, sir.
You happened to be on the same boat, or you actually went with Oprah?
I actually went with Oprah. I went with Oprah and her staff. My friend, he worked for Oprah, and this was a thank you gift from Oprah to her staff. She took everybody on the staff, and if you had a family, including children, you could bring your family and the kids. If you didn't, you could bring a plus one, and I was the plus one of this person.
Holy shit.
And it was a boat that held 3,000, and there was 1,300 of us on the boat with all this decks to just walk around and bandy about on. And it was 2 weeks through the Mediterranean, and we stopped at Barcelona. I'm not going to remember all the places, but we stopped at Barcelona, Malta, Greece, Istanbul, and all those other places that I'm not good at geography with that are around that body of water.
Wow.
And then one night, we were watching this dope-ass Latin jazz musician who was doing an amazing cover of Joe Cuba's I'll Never Go Back to Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And behind him on the TV screen, we just start to see this information about Michael Jackson has passed away. And we're like, God damn, this is terrible.
That's crazy.
And we're on a boat and everything is free on the boat, so we are clearly shit-faced. And we're like, well, we have to go dance to Michael Jackson. There was a club on the boat, so we all go to the club on the boat. We get there, no Michael Jackson is being played. Oprah shows up, very salty that no Michael Jackson is being played, kicks the DJ out, starts playing Michael Jackson, comes out on the dance floor, and I'm like, I'm dancing to Michael Jackson with Oprah right now. This is dope. This is dope. This is dope.
If we were in the movie Brain Candy, I feel like...
That would be your Gleeman X moment?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just imagining, like you dancing to Michael Jackson with Oprah is...
With the post office.
I'm telling you, transcendent, yo. Transcendent. It was amazing.
Damn. Yeah. I mean, and you also saw Genesis.
What a life.
The I Can't Dance tour. I mean, what a better time to see Genesis than I Can't Dance tour.
I had that tape. I really loved Genesis.
It was amazing. Yeah, there's great songs on that album.
I still love Genesis. Exactly, yeah.
Thank you. That was our game of Signed Blue, y'all. Now, we are going to be wrapping it up shortly, but before we go, it is time for Staff Picks. Every week, we ask the panel to tell us about a movie we think folks should check out. Any movie at all. It can be in the theater. It can be streaming. Everybody just gives a staff pick. Grace, would you like to start us off, please?
Sure. There is a lesbian movie on Netflix that seems to just be there eternally because it has been there for years and years and years. It's a Swedish movie I'm not going to give anything away, but with a happy ending, and that sort of is on brand with what we were talking about today. It's called Kiss Me. And I go through periodically the LGBT section on Netflix just to see what they have and be prepared to cry. And I was pleasantly surprised when I saw this movie because it does have a happy ending and I really enjoyed it. So if you are a lesbian and you're looking for a love story and you don't mind subtitles, Kiss Me is perhaps the movie for you.
Oh.
That's what's up. That's what's up.
But it has to be a lesbian who doesn't mind subtitles, which is, I mean,
you know that stereotype.
That old saw.
Alonzo, what do you got for us?
Well, mine is also streaming on Netflix. It's one of my favorite queer films of recent years, and it is a darker and weirder teen movie with some coming out elements in it, and in fact stars Logan Miller, who plays the a-hole kid in Love, Simon. It's a movie called Take Me to the River that I saw at Sundance a few years ago, and it blew me away. It was one of my favorite films of the last couple of years, and I'm constantly pushing it on people because it got a very tiny release. Logan Miller plays a kid from California who is going to a family reunion in Nebraska with his parents. And he is out, but they kind of ask him to not, you know, be too flagrant at this family reunion because it's, you know, with the side of the family and they're, you know, kind of the country people or whatever. And then it goes into just very odd and unusual and unpredictable and dark places. And it's a fascinating film. And it has lots of great performances, starting with Logan Miller, but also including Josh Hamilton and the young girl who played one of the daughters on Louie. And it is just Dave White will watch any number of, like, decapitations and, you know, April Wolf style, you know, gore fests without blinking an eye. And this movie, in for 80 minutes, made him so tense on the sofa because it reminded him of his own family stuff that he could barely breathe. No. So I love Take Me to the River. Go check it out on Netflix.
That's what's up, yo. April.
That makes me wish that I had thought about recommending, like, you know, horror that's also queer, like Hot Tension or whatever, High Tension. But I'm recommending some films that are coming in the theaters as well, because I think that I Kill Giants is going to be a sleeper and no one's going to go and see it. But I think people should go and see I Kill Giants, especially if you have any kids. It's about a girl who's like maybe 12. And she's in this town, and she believes that she protects the town from destructive giants, you know, that they're going to, you know, take out her entire home. Like, she thinks that she's the only force that's keeping them at bay. And it's kind of like the tomboy girl version, like a grittier, kind of like dirtier version of A Monster Calls, which came out like about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And that one's kind of like more Harry Potterish in a way is what I would describe it. But this is like American, like blue collar, like I kill giants, you know. And it's a really sweet story, and the special effects are really subtle but well done, and it brings a tear to the eye, and it's about grief. So I mean, definitely go and see
I love
that.
A kid's movie about grief.
Oh my god, I just like any movie about grief. I'm like, yeah, just give it to me. Oh,
April on brand, yo, on brand. Oh, I saw the most twisted movie I have seen in a minute, and I really enjoyed it. I finally watched Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Speaking of Nicole Kidman.
Yes, yeah. I was glad that you brought up when I saw that Nicole Kidman. I was like, oh, nice. I'm going to be excited to talk about this. Killing of a Sacred Deer. It's by the director of The Lobster,
Yorgos Lanthimos.
I was going to say, we have to ask because he loves saying Yorgos' name.
Lanthimos.
And it is a twisted movie. I was not expecting the, I hope I'm using the right word here, the lack of brevity in this movie. Is it, I mean, there's just like I feel like the lobster I enjoyed very much.
You mean the lack of levity?
Levity, yes. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, levity. The Lobster is a twisted movie, but there's a lot of comedy behind it, and just kind of like deadpan humor behind it. Killing of a Sacred Deer
is just the deadpan.
Is just the deadpan. I mean, down to like the I feel like the acting style and the delivery. I'm not going to tell you what it's about, other than that Colin Farrell is a doctor, Nicole Kidman is his wife, and a child of a former patient of Colin Farrell's shows up and tells him, this thing is going to happen to you and your family. You have to make a decision. And it just, man, it is intense, yo. The last 10 minutes of that movie, I was like, the last 10 minutes and the first 5 minutes of that movie, I was like, what am I getting into right now?
Barry Keoghan.
Yes. Is that the little boy?
Yeah.
Oh, what else has he been in? Do you know off the top of your head?
He was in Dunkirk.
That's who he is.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's amazing.
Is it on Netflix right now?
It is on Amazon Prime for 99 cents. 99
oh,
cents,
wow.
Y'all. Yeah, that's...
Oh, so, you'd be a sucker not to watch it.
Thank you.
Watch it twice and pay twice. Look, I have three brothers. They're all doctors. Whoever dressed Colin Farrell in this movie is nailing like MD casual separates.
Yes. Oh, I fucking love that movie. I want, and like, let's just talk about it after this is done.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
We don't want to give
you so much to cover. Yeah,
hey, well, next week we will be talking about Isle of Dogs with special guests Allegra Ringo and Renee Colbert, a fellow Maximum Fun podcast. Can I Pet Your Dog? I love them already. I am all in on who these two people are based on the name of that podcast. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. 5-star reviews get a shout out on the show. This week we got, oh, this first one is in response to last week's episode, Alonzo. Alonzo, shout out to you driving that episode and hosting.
Thank you,
thank you very much.
It was very intimidating to sit in your driver's
seat. No. You handled it, yo. It was very fun to listen to.
I hope I slid it back to the right place so that your feet touch the pedals comfortably.
Aw.
Come on, man.
I didn't change the station or anything.
You're making me blush, bro. Connor Holt says, really enjoy the podcast. In regards to the Wrinkle in Time episode, I enjoy the film, even with some script and tonal issues, because I felt DuVernay really cared about the characters and the story's heart. Also, looking back on my favorite kids' films, the 90s were all about Disney animation, and for some reason, a lot of sports movies. The Sandlot, The Mighty Ducks, Space Jam, Three Ninjas.
Rookie of the Year, hello.
Yeah, Rookie of the
Thank
Year.
Thank you. Angels in the Outfield, was that a Disney joke?
Yeah, that was Disney.
I hope I'm pronouncing this name. Mr. Glennis, I love the way the pod's chemistry brings a refreshing levity, the word I didn't know how to use, even during difficult subject matter. Also, the more Ingu Kang, the better.
Yes. I agree. We love Ingu.
In all things.
We wish that she lived here, actually.
Well, she's downstairs.
Trolling.
Maddie Shack says, a nice break from all the movie podcasts run by straight white men. Don't get me wrong, those are great too. These guys give more of an industry perspective, which is great and unique, but they also dig into the pop culture around movies. A lot of jokes, lots of great perspective, lots of great guests. Thank you very much for those kind words.
Great guests like Grace, right?
Hello,
back to me.
Grace, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We would love to have you again. I am making that call right now.
An executive decision.
Executive decision.
Feel very
done,
important.
Yo. We're a three-headed beast. We all work together, and we figure these things out.
Where can people find you?
Oh, sure. You can just find me at Grace Baldridge, most places. Bald like a head, ridge like a mountain. The finale episode of my show Murder with Friends is live today. We talk about Ted Bundy. And if you like Alonzo, which you really should love Alonzo, then you should check out the episodes of Murder with Friends that he has done. We talked about Ed Gein, and we have also talked about H.H. Holmes, and they're two of my favorite episodes on the show.
Yeah, I'm in.
Yes, that's what's up. Hey, check out our Facebook group.
Can we get some wine out of that grape?
Yes.
Facebook grape soda.
Check out my Facebook group.
Check out our Facebook group. If you haven't subscribed yet, handle that at facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYaPodcast. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod or send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This has been a production of MaximumFun.org, and that's what's up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.